some Adam Jones.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Drake.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Time to make it do what it do.
Go draft recap. Draft grade.
Yeah, we trying to get Andre to man up.
But I'm already manning up. Uh-oh, bro. You know, America, you know what's interesting, America, on this Sunday, right after the NFL draft? You know, I guess if we start this out correctly, I guess we should talk about the dichotomy of a text, because again, text messages, you know, there's a Key and Peele episode about how, you know, he's like, oh, what's up, bro? And it was like one side is like totally cool, the other side is like, you know, I'm gonna kill, you know, and it's really interesting. So, you know, I guess I should take that into consideration whenever some text, you know, send smiley faces, whatever. I don't know, but you know, again, there was no ill will at all. I was like, hey, the show's all cool, we'll make it work. It's all good. So again, that's where I'm coming from, if you will, and 100% no ill will until Rob starts chunking on talking junk like he always does. But again, can't talk about a man's business. I had 3 events this weekend. I'm still going to pull this off. I ain't going to cry about it, and it is what it is. That's all. That's what we do. So what's up? What? How y'all doing?
Hey, man, we just wanted
to make sure we didn't have to give you no cheese to go with that wine. That's all. But since you explained we'll be all right.
I'm
we'll
scared.
Hold the cheese back.
I'm with you, Rob. I'm scared to say anything. How you doing? I'm scared to say anything. I'm just living in it. It's your world. Hey, how you doing today on this Sunday night?
Don't be scared at all. I'm not mad. It's more or less like me. I just get focused, man. So it's all good. Hey, but again, we are ready to talk some sports. It feels like it's been a minute. Not sure if Curtis and Gary calling it. It seems like not, Rob. So feels like some back to our original crew, man. Which
I think
it's a good change.
Not Gary.
You know. Okay. Well.
Yeah, so
I don't see him in.
Some
so,
prayers
you know,
up to Gary and his family.
Okay. Oh man.
But
okay.
I think Curtis is joining us, but Curtis is supposed to join us, but not Gary.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right. Well, like I said,
yeah.
He does all good. But you know, if so, we'll keep this going as we always like to do. Curtis has an interesting delivery, so we'll kind of keep that as always. But if it's us three again. I will not be mad at all. Not that it's a problem. Again, if you're listening, Curtis, not that. Just more or less, it's been a minute since we've had our original crew, if you will. But as we always like to do really quickly, we are going to throw out the numbers. I got to check in with the fellows really quickly to my fellows who I guess I would draft you guys number one if it came down to it. But it's all good. JQ, how you doing?
You better.
What?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
I'd be better if Perez had a, you know, took a 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals. They only got 1 out of 3, but it is what it is. It's hard to beat the Cardinals at Busch Stadium. A little disappointed with my Bengals draft, but we'll get to some of that here in a little bit. I'm good, man. Like I said, this is your world. You run it. You know, you go ahead and go for it, bro. How you doing? Safe travels. Everybody good. And
safe travels.
Feeling all right.
Everyone's good. Yeah, and then like I said, I think I can't wait to talk about the draft talk too. Again, Rob left us plenty of things to discuss. And it's hard to get draft grades in there. Obviously, that's an important thing, too. But we'll see how it plays out with that. We have some interesting news as far as with Josh Rosen getting traded. Like, we knew that was going to happen. Just a pretty interesting weekend, to say the least, man. So, again, we'll get the pulse of our cities. Rob's team didn't have too many draft picks. But, you know, I'm sure they made quality versus quantity. So, Mr. Rob Ford, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Man, doing great. You know, ready to talk some sports. You know, a little disappointed in the Bucks and the Rockets losing today, but oh well. Yeah, life goes on.
Like life does go on. Yeah. That's right. What? Yeah, I was disappointed about the Bucks, you know, for sure. But you know, it's all good. Hey, really quickly, let's throw in these numbers if those want to call into the show, and we'll get this party started as we always like to do. The number to call into the show, it's always 424-243-9519. That is the number. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingsports for the 12th man, or if you put 12th man sports, you will find us as well. So, gentlemen, let's kick this off, man. Right off the gate, we're going to kick it off with Dwayne Haskins. That was a huge surprise, and I know we got to talk about the Giants, if you will, passing on Dwayne Haskins to pick up Eli 2.0, Daniel Jones. But, you know, sometimes it seems like it's a better situation, fellas, where, you know, obviously he's from, obviously he's at the area, so this may be a good move. And if you look at kind of the situation, I think he has opportunity to play right away. So, again, I'm going to start off with you, JQ, and, you know, your thoughts, because obviously you're closer to Dwayne Haskins being from Ohio State. Do you think, what's about Dwayne Haskins and, all you, bro. Kick it off, bro.
Well, to be honest, now that I've had a couple of days, it reminds me a lot of the Luka and the Trae Young piece now, right? Because, you know, not that they were traded for each other in this draft, in the NFL draft, but I feel like now they're in the same conference and the same division, they're going to be constantly be intertwined, and you're never going to get away from the whole Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins bit, like you're never going to get away from it from the Trae Young and Luka Doncic bit in the NBA.
Yep.
Like we talked about on Thursday, you get a lot of that. What were the Giants thinking? They could have got him at 17. But for the Haskins piece of it, you know, he originally is from the New Jersey area and moved down to the DMV area later in life. So, you know, he's got that kind of split piece to him, but he wanted to be a Giant. And he said it, you know, he photoshopped himself in a Giants jersey. And when you saw him with that smirk when Daniel Jones went to the Giants at 6, and then, you know, he fell to the Redskins at 15, I don't know if the Redskins are a better situation. It's kind of on par. The Redskins are still trying to dig themselves out of it. But that chip that he has on his shoulder now, you know, you're talking about somebody who just broke Drew Brees' touchdown passing record in the Big Ten. I mean, that's huge when you talk about breaking that record. And I know this is a passing league more so now than it was. It was a bigger deal when Drew Brees did it. But to be able to knock off Drew Brees' record, and then you watch the Redskins also go and get McLaurin as well. So not only do you get him if you're the Redskins, but you get one of his safety valves that he used at Ohio State and bring him into the fold with him. You're doing everything you want to do if you're the Redskins to make life more comfortable for Dwayne Haskins. Like they don't have world beaters, you know, in Washington. Dotson is okay. Reed can't stay healthy, but when he's healthy, he's a legitimate monster at tight end. You don't know how Geist is going to be coming back off of that injury. They still got AP, but you're looking at Geist to really come in and be who we thought he was going to be last year, and maybe he's still another year away from that after having that injury. But I really feel like for Haskins, it's like they doubted you. You slipped halfway to the draft where you thought you were going to go top 10. Now you're going top 15. You went to 15. You know, you get upset. You talk about how the league has messed up by not drafting you earlier. Now it's time to show and prove. But I do give the Redskins a lot of credit for, you know, filling out around him, especially getting – you cannot underestimate getting McLaurin for him. And I don't know if McLaurin is going to start with him or how that's going to play out with the whole Case King vibe and with Dotson and Reed and how that's going to work out in terms of who starts for the Redskins. But getting somebody he's familiar with at the wide receiver position and have them learn together as you bring him in is – it's a step in the right direction if you're a Redskins fan, if you're watching what the Redskins did in that draft. That's a huge plus for them. You got two hardworking guys. McLaurin is highly underrated. You know, he doesn't have the flashy stats, but he's a hard worker. I think you maybe put him in the slot. I'm a Redskins fan, but it's going to be really hard for me to root against the Redskins watching what they just did.
Mm-hmm. Picking up Montez Sweat, too. Rob, your thoughts on everything, bro?
Yep.
Well, I mean – you know, looking at this draft, obviously, you know, one of the things that I always pay attention to is value. And if you look at where the Redskins got Dwayne Haskins and didn't have to trade anything to get him, or didn't have to move up to get him, I mean, it's a flat-out steal. I mean, I don't know if there's anything the Redskins did I don't think it was anything they did spectacular, but they just got lucky, I guess is what you can say, but you know, Dwayne Haskins just kind of fell into their laps, and I think it's just a win for their organization. And I think from the Dwayne Haskins' point of view, you just hope that they have the right plan in place for developing him. And, you know, every organization approaches it different. I mean, obviously the Kansas City Chiefs, they sat Mahomes down for a year behind Alex Smith. I mean, do they want to do the same thing with Gaskins? Do they want to sit him behind shucks, what's the guy? And then you still got Alex Smith, you know, who's probably obviously going to miss this entire season. But what do you do with him going forward with the contract that he still has with the Redskins, too? A boatload of guaranteed money as well. And so I'm just curious to see what the developmental process is going to be for this Redskins team. Obviously, before Alex Smith got hurt, this was a team that was 6-3. Wasn't a great team even before he got hurt, but, you know, they were winning. And so what can they do to move forward? What's going to be the proper process for them to develop Gaskins? And I'm very curious to see that process. My guess is they're going to start Case Keenum initially and see how well they can perform before they turn the reins over to Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. But overall, you got to, I mean, great value for the pick in 15. Great value. I know we're going to talk about value in a bit, but that's overall, that's what the Redskins got in that pick.
Absolutely. Like you touched on, being able to do that without having to spend any capital to move up and go get him. I mean, nobody really liked Daniel Snyder, but being able to have it just fall in your lap like that, I don't know how you do much better. I mean, that's really insane to me how that happened to them. That was wild.
And they get Montez Sweat, too. I mean, just a really good draft for them, if you will, too, just kind of getting value, too. But, you know, it's interesting because you're watching that and you know, before, whenever the draft was, you know, kind of, you know, a couple days out, there's teams that they make mistakes. And it seems like now you got a couple days kind of like reassess everything. And then it still seems like everyone, I had a couple Giants fans, they are just like scratching their heads, man, with everything too. And then the Redskins fans, I know they're like, huh, we actually struck it right. So they've been on the end of a couple of those interesting situations. And they've always had challenges with the quarterbacks, right? It feels like they've always gone back and forth. And now it kind of feels like, you know, all right, this is kind of a good move for them. So, you know, again, just a very interesting weekend, and we'll talk about that too. And I feel like we're kind of picking on the Giants, if you will. And it's kind of like easy, like low-hanging fruit, man, because, again, let's talk about your thoughts on the draft, you know, because, again, they did pick up some good players if you don't count the Daniel Jones. You know, obviously Dexter Lawrence was a good pick. You know, they pick up DeAndre Baker here from the cornerback from Georgia. So, again, you know, in spite of, you know, the kind of controversy, what do you think about what they did too as well, Rob? What do you think about an overall grade for them?
Well, I mean, when you look at the Giants from an overall perspective, obviously, you know, Daniel Jones, I mean, that's the biggest blunder of the draft. Definitely. Mm-hmm. The biggest blunder in the draft. I mean, obviously he's going to have a phenomenal career for every draft expert to change their opinion of that. I mean, to pick Daniel Jones at number six, I mean, I don't, you know, Drew Lock went in the second round, and I have a higher grade in Drew Lock than over Daniel Jones, and so just about every other draft expert. So, I mean, picking the guy at number six, obviously they must have a strong conviction about the player. And and for their sake, obviously, you know, we'll see if they're right or where they're wrong. But, I mean, that's a huge blunder. I mean, that pick alone gives the Giants a C in this draft, regardless of what they did. Now, they got some good football players. Dexter Lawrence at 17 was a bit of a reach. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a good football player. Then, of course, the corner for Georgia, a good value there getting him where they got. They're trading up to number 30. So that was a solid football pick. From a value standpoint, that was a good pick. And also, other than that, their best pick in a draft from a value standpoint, third round, O'Shane Jimenez, pass rusher from Old Dominion. He can be a real sleeper. He'll be a really good pass rusher in the league. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how he pans out. But he could be a real steal for them in the third round. But that Daniel Jones pick alone has to give them a draft grade of a C. That pick alone had that much weight in this draft. Like I said, they got some good football players. Dexter Lawrence is going to be a contributor, probably going to start right away, even though they could have got him a little lower. But he's going to be a good football player for that team.
And the thing about it is that I agree with you with the C at best, because they set themselves back. Because even with Baker moving up, you feel like Lawrence, and he tells a good pedigree at Clemson, you know, and I love what he's done on the field. But when you look at him in terms of being 23 to 28th grade pick, so to speak, and you take him to 17, it feels like it felt like they were looking at it like they were at the back end of a snake draft and said, okay, I got to get this guy, because if he won't be back, come back to me on the snake draft, so I got to go a little higher than most people are on him if I really want him. That's how I feel like the Giants approached this draft, when they didn't necessarily have to. And they set themselves back, so they take Daniel Jones too early. It's like, okay, well, we got a guy we really like, and that's Lawrence, but we know that we want to trade. We can't trade back to get him because he's going to be gone, so at 17 we're going to take him. It's like, oh, okay, well, I love the DeAndre Baker move, but then you can move those to get him, and you might could have got him in the second round, given what was happening with him and Green and Byron Murphy from Washington. So it just feels like they were always a little bit ahead of the curve, where everybody's like, why are you taking him so high? And that's the piece that's always going to ring false for all the other procrastinators, so to speak. And everybody else is judging the draft. I mean, they get the value, you know, throughout the rest of the draft, so to speak. I like Darius Slayton in the fifth round from Auburn. I think, you know, Denham just wasn't a good fit for that offense. But I do like Slayton at that pick in the fifth round, number 171 overall. But the Giants, they just set themselves up for such ridicule. And you can't evaluate this draft and what they did now on the heels of trading OBJ. So now you've traded OBJ. You can't make that work. You really reach for the quarterback from Duke, and then you reach for Dexter Lawrence. So it's like, well, like those are like three questionable moves back-to-back-to-back, and it's going to be hard. Those guys are really going to have a ton of pressure on them. Like I said it before, Jones is going to always have to be better than Dwayne Haskins for the rest of his career. All Giants are going to say, we could have had that dude down the road. He's doing it for the Redskins. Mm. And I was looking at Jones like, who are you, bro? Tough position to put him in to be the savior of that franchise moving forward.
Yep. Curtis, is that you jumping on, Curtis?
Yeah, Curtis is here.
Yeah,
hey.
Welcome, sir. We are just doing a recap as far as the interesting pick that the Giants did, picking Daniel Jones. I don't know if you want to, like, throw your advice on that as well, sir.
It's always just going to be you know, I usually don't take an interest in the preseason, but because I paid the interest in the draft this year and where people went, now I'm going to be interested in the preseason. I think the only two draft people that have guaranteed spots on teams are rounds 1 and 2. After 3 to 7, they may not make the team, you know. Mm. So that's going to be interesting for me to see how the drafts went. It was also interesting to me to see that as soon as the draft was over, they was already calling these unrestricted pre-agents.
Mm-hmm.
And the teams were already, and that story at the end of that draft program about the Denver Bronco running back was very interesting and very good. He's still living with his parents because as a free agent, they were only getting $15,000. And then when he signed his rookie contract, now he's at $400,000. You know, very interesting. What I think I know now, And what I think I know now about football drafts is, okay, there's the measurables. There's the 40-yard dash. There's the vertical. There's the bench press. And all that stuff looks impressive, and all that stuff looks like you can be the monster, but what you can't measure and you can't see is heart. And with heart, a football heart, and a football meanness is the thing you can't see. And all these guys got these projections, and people did the best they can to get what they think is going to fit with the team. But what's going to show when we go live is heart. And if you don't got that heart, you're not going to make that team.
Yep. And just to say, kind of piggybacking on that as well, Curtis, it's interesting because we are going to talk about the number one pick, right? You know, you're speaking of kind of how it changed the name of the guard in the NFL, because most of the time, you know, Kyle Murray, you know, he's a shorter quarterback. So the fact that, you know, again, your most prototypical quarterbacks are 6'4", 6'5", you know, big guys. And now you got, you know, Kyler Murray kind of bucking the trend, if you will. And you got to have some heart, you know, because, again, I mean, if you're the Cardinals, you have completely flipped that roster. You traded Josh Rosen, which obviously we saw the writing on the wall. But still, we kind of were 50-50. But then you realize that you never know until the actual pick is in. And, like, yeah, this is actually happening. And then, you know, we see what's happening with that, too. And I guess speaking of that, let's talk about the Cardinals and what they did. And then, obviously, Josh Rosen. I don't know, gentlemen, if you saw Josh's kind of farewell to Arizona, which is kind of like, yeah, you know, it was kind of interesting. You know, he kind of gave it to college. It was kind of a good, you know, hey, you know, whatever. But deep down, just him unfollowing the Cardinals, he knew something was up. And just the whole circumstances have been adjusted. And then now he's going to the Dolphins, who, again, you know, they get another quarterback because, again, Tannehill is not the answer. So you have two different franchises, and I guess we'll see how those parallel, like you said earlier, JQ, another parallel between Rosen and Kyler Murray again. So I'll let you take that and kind of run with that, JQ.
Hey, when we talk about the Cardinals, yeah. And the thing about it, we talked about Rosen last year, is that he's kind of a prickly personality, right? So he's not for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
He's a little bit like Aaron Rodgers. But with Kyler Murray, I think they feel like, you know, and I talked about it last time we got on the call, that there was no slam dunk pick in this draft. It was like, who has the biggest upside? And they thought Kyler Murray did. And I would agree that he does have the biggest upside. So they gambled. And, you know, jobs are lost and won on these decisions. So we're going to see how that would affect Arizona. But if you look at the rest of that draft, I really like them getting Deontay Thompson from Alabama. I really like them getting Isabella from Massachusetts. I really like them getting Byron Murphy from Washington. The Cardinals really, to me, really had a deep draft. I really think they did what they needed to do. They went and got, you know, a dynamic playmaker and quarterback in Murray. We'll see how he can handle the rigors. But, you know, when you look at a draft that doesn't have any slam dunks, they took the upside, and I can understand that. You get Murphy, who's an outstanding cornerback as well, and you get him to wide receivers. And you forget that guy, Kirk Leiter, from Texas A&M. So you put Isabella and Butler with him in the wide receivers, and, you know, and they still get to learn from one of the greatest, and Larry Fitzgerald. And then get Deontay Thompson to safety. I mean, they're trying to make moves to build that team, and I think you have to look at it from a macro kind of view with Arizona, because they weren't close, right? So they have to get some building blocks in the building, so to speak, and keep building upon it. They're at least a couple years away from it, at least, and they're probably going to trade Patrick, you know, because they can get as much value as they can for him, because he's not going to stay there and be part of a rebuilding process in the, you know, in his prime, so at least part of his prime in his career. So you're talking about getting more capital if you can trade him and get a decent deal for him. So this is a rebuild. And Arizona, to me, is also like a lot like what Miami is doing, that they understand that they're not close and they have to basically hit the reset button. But if I'm looking at their draft, I can't really knock it.
Mm-hmm. I'll say that enough for the offensive line, too, as well, too. But shout-out to Kobe Gossett, too. I did his wedding, too, man. Hope he's doing good, too. So what's to you, Rob, about everything, man?
Yeah, I totally agree with Arizona. I give them a firm A as far as the draft grades are concerned. Byron Murphy, he got on top of the second round. I thought Byron Murphy was the top corner in the draft, even though he was drafted behind DeAndre Baker from the Giants. But I thought Murphy was the best corner in the draft, and the Cardinals got him at the top of the second round with the first pick. So, and also some steals, as JQ talked about, Deontay Thompson from Alabama, where they picked him. And also Akeem Butler. I mean, that's a guy I've had in the second round of some of my mocks as well. So to get him in the fourth round as well, I mean, they got value throughout their entire draft. Some pretty good wide receivers, Zach Allen, kind of right where he was targeted. I kind of had him late second, early third. He was first picked the third round. So that's kind of right on target where he was going most mocks. But they got some good value and some good players throughout the entire draft. I thought they were solid every single day of the draft. I mean, if I had to grade us every day, they got an A for every single day of the draft.
Wow. Nice.
Wow. But, I mean, and it's good to see that, you know, Arizona's going a direction, and you know they're going in a direction. And they're letting that new coach a guy that's never coached before, giving him all the tools to be successful. And they're up against it because their division, they look like the bottom of that division. And if Kingsbury's got an idea to get them off the bottom, then you got to hand it to that administration and that ownership to give him everything that he feels like he needs to be successful.
Nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
You nailed it right
there, right
too,
the
and that's the thing. Yeah, but like I said, at least we've highlighted some good thoughts, and good job, Rob. Again, just interesting, you know, you can kind of tell a direction of where a team is going because, you know, obviously they could have been a little bit more hesitant, and even though I don't like how they did Steve Wilkes, you know, from that perspective, you know, at least you know that it does seem like they've been making some really good decisions. And let's kind of keep it, you know, on the West Coast here, and another squad that made some kind of questionable moves, but again, you can't fault the fact that they went with what they know. And let's talk about the Raiders, the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, I was curious to see how Mike Mayock would do. Obviously, great, great talent evaluator. Now he is, you know, the GM for the Raiders. And you know how Chucky, John Gruden, is. It's funny to listen to the recaps of the calls. Are you ready to be a Raider? He's so intense, man. But let's talk about their draft. And they actually were kind of surprising, too, because earlier in the draft process, you heard they were kind of like tempted to draft Kyler Murray. But then again, we weren't sure where they were going to go. And then, obviously, gentlemen, it looks like for now, that's Derek Carr is safe. But, Rob, what say you about what the Raiders did?
Well, obviously, once again, just like I said about the Giants, you know, they got some good football players. It was just not the value. And I'll say that about the Raiders, too. They got some good football players, but they just didn't get the value in their picks, in my opinion. Cleveland Farrell, I mean, wow. I mean, that's somebody they could have possibly got at 24 or moved up a little bit ahead right there to get him somewhere around there and not at number 4 overall. Josh Jacobs, that's, you know, ballpark of where he was going to go. That part of the first round or early part of the second round. And the same thing with Jonathan Abram, not so bad there as well. But the Cleveland Farrell pick drops their grade down to about a B, in my opinion, just for that huge reach. I mean, like I said, they got some good football players. Is he going to contribute to that team? Absolutely. Trayvon Mullen, cornerback, national champion at Clemson. Obviously, and they also drafted Hunter Renfro, a wide receiver from Clemson as well. Who could possibly be a nice
good
guy
point.
In the slot. Foster Moreau, a very underrated tight end from LSU, another solid pick there as well. So if I had to give them an overall grade, I would give them a B, and it's mostly because of the Cleveland Farrell pick. Getting him at number 4, like I said, he's going to be a good football player, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be an elite pass rusher, and Josh Allen possibly has – the potential of possibly being an elite pass rusher.
That's crazy.
Right.
I do like the Jonathan Abram pick, too. Yeah, go ahead, JK. I'm sorry. Got to look excited. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when you – no, you're good. And what I'm saying, you're right. When you take a defensive end in the top 5, that dude better have double-digit sacks for multiple
Khalil
years.
Mack.
And you look at him, and you talked about it, Cleveland Farrell from Clemson, Mullen from Clemson, Riffo from Clemson. I mean, there's a thing there, right, that, you know, they're trying to go with people that – to have upside, to have produced, but also come from winning programs and understand what it takes to win. And that may not always translate to the next level, but I understand a little bit what they're doing. But you're right, Farrell in the top 5, so much pressure on him that if he doesn't have double-digit sacks, then you're going to get sent him a buck because you took a defensive end in the top 5. And that's what you expect from a defensive end if he goes top 5. So that's the issue with me for them. Josh Jacobs is a great pick for me. That dude has the way Alabama rotates the running back. He doesn't have a lot of knowledge, you know, on those legs, so to speak. He's real physical. You know, you may be getting a younger Marshawn Lynch, and don't nobody get wrong with me and get upset because I understand how serious Marshawn Lynch is. We're talking about somebody that's going to be super physical with the line of scrimmage and be able to break tackles and set a tone and a nasty streak. That's what he's going to be able to do. So I look at them and say that, and you also talk about, you know, you talk about Foster Moreau, LSU. So you talk about 3 Clemson, 1 Alabama, 1 LSU. That to me says, okay, You know, I'm going to go get guys from big programs that have played in big games and know what it takes to win on a big stage. And they may not pan out in the NFL level, but I'm going to take their pedigree and what I think they can do and see how that translates to the NFL in terms of coming from that kind of pressure-packed situation and see if they can survive it. So, you know, I'm not overly enthused about it. They made a lot of good moves in my mind in the offseason, but it kind of was a letdown heading into the draft with some of the moves they made. But the flip side of it is they went and got dudes from winning programs in college that know how to win. So if you say that's your plan and your philosophy, then you got to give them a lot of credit. But Pharrell is always going to be one that's going to maybe, you know, be a thorn in their side, so to speak, if he doesn't live up to those expectations, which are huge expectations when you take a defensive end in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm surprised you gave him a B. The first thing was I thought they were dead set on trying to figure out what they can do to replace the guy that they gave away to Chicago.
Matt.
I thought they were dead set. I thought that was their number one priority. And
oh yeah.
Okay, so and because that wasn't their number one priority, some stuff I've been listening to on different things is okay, you leave a job for 10 years and you are, you know, he was a little bit in touch, but you're not really doing the job. And you walked off the job for over 10 years. Did the job pass you by? Do you know what you're doing? Do you understand the nuances? Because 10 years, especially in football, is light years. Football today is light years from football 10 years ago.
You're right.
And my feeling is, you know, John Gruden, I got to question that with John Gruden. And I got to question that with John Gruden. He's been out of the game for over 10 years. And they got to move to Vegas. They got a lot of things going on. And maybe they made a mistake when they believed in something. That it's looking like it may backfire on him.
It's a feral pick. Feral pick is going to haunt them if he done pan. That's the one, because you took him fourth overall. I'm not overly mad at the rest of the draft, but that feral pick at four, when you have your shot at what, you know, your Murray's gone, so you can't replace Carr. And then, you know, like I said, you have Sweat out there, you've got Allen out there, you've got these other higher impact kind of players out there available, and you take him, that's going to be the one that they're going to have to answer for if he doesn't pan out. I think the rest of the draft is not bad for me, but that pick
I agree.
Top five pick, and you take him, somebody that's going to go 23rd probably, that's the one. That's the one.
Whew.
That's the second biggest blunder in the draft, in my opinion, behind Daniel Jones. It's the second biggest blunder. I don't think it's as big of a blunder as Daniel Jones. You know, I give the Giants a C, mainly because of the Daniel Jones pick. But this particular pick is not as bad as the Daniel Jones, but it's the second biggest blunder in the draft, in my opinion. And obviously both of those teams came away with three first-round picks, so they do have players. I mean, these three guys are all probably going to start. Daniel Jones probably not from day one. But the Raiders probably do have three starters from day one.
Well, you're right. And just to kind of piggyback on what everyone said, too, because that's the crazy thing. Because we're all in agreement, right? We all thought that if the Raiders didn't get the quarterback, they were going to replace Khalil Mack, and Josh Allen was sitting right there, right?
Yeah.
And you totally didn't do that. So you're like, whoa. And
but he looks like he's an idiot, though.
That was the first big shock in the draft.
Yeah,
I agree with Josh Allen. I text y'all that about how the over-under when he's going to get arrested in Jacksonville. When he came out to look like he was going to like a black exploitation movie. What he saw out there, I said, man, I don't know what's going on with Josh Allen. and you're from Florida and you end up in Kentucky, I talk about it all the time. Those dudes from Florida that end up in those second and third tier schools are idiots. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do anything to prove me otherwise. So a piece of me is like, I understand that Josh Allen won, but there were others to me better prospects left on the board that Oakland could have taken.
Yeah, you're right. This is interesting too, but yeah. All right, we got 24 minutes, gentlemen. We're moving right along here. I do want to talk a little bit about our squads here, so we'll give some time to talk about your teams, if you will. I know JQ said that he wasn't overly excited about his Bengals draft, so now is a chance to kind of talk about your team and how you felt you did and your thoughts on the draft process too. So, you know, how it is. JQ, Rob, and Curtis, obviously. So go ahead with your assessment.
Again, and we talked about it, and it's a recurring thing where you feel like, you know, pieces of the draft are really good, but the one pick that sticks out in your car, and you're like, what's going on? And for me, that's Sample from Washington. I'm sorry to say that, but he mm-hmm. might be the best blocking tight end in the draft, but that's you can't take a blocking tight end in the second round. And I understand mm-hmm. I'm trying to, you know, put in a philosophy. You watch them go get a Michael Jordan from Ohio State, watch them get Jonah Williams from Alabama, and you say, okay, I'm putting Sample with them, so I'm basically trying to get three offensive linemen so I can, you know, do that whole Todd Gurley thing where we pound the ball and then we flash and pass off that and I make Andy Dalton beat Jared Goff. I get that, but it's about value, and Rob is 100% correct. You could have gotten Sample. You could have traded back again and gotten Sample later in the draft. I don't know why they thought like they had to do that. I think they just fell in love with that kid and thought he was great and just said, you know what, we're going to make sure that we don't lose him, even if it means drafting him too early. And that's what happened. But then they come behind it, and you take Trayvon from Texas A&M. I really like the Anderson kid from Oklahoma. Like, I understand they're trying to establish an identity there. The defensive tackle they got from Arizona State, you know, he was later in the draft, but it's a gamble, so to speak. But, you know, he's maybe a one-hit wonder, but he's got all the tools. He's a big guy. Maybe learning from Dunlap and Atkins on that line kind of helps him out. But I look at that secondary, and I'm like, dude, y'all got roasted. And I know some people got hurt, but, man, you didn't do enough to me as a Bengals fan to address the back end. So now you're trying to make sure that those picks from a couple years ago, the kid from Kansas State, Jordan Willis, and a kid from Auburn, that you feel like they're going to take the next step and kind of rejuvenate that defensive line so you don't need to cover as long in the back end. But that's a huge gamble when you're looking at now having Lamar Jackson in the weapons instead of Baltimore Gatetown, looking at Cleveland with Baker Mayfield in the weapons that he has. Oh, and Pittsburgh still has Ben Roethlisberger and Juju. I just don't understand that, so to speak, from a standpoint of, I understand getting the offensive lineman trying to establish an identity, but you got to play two sides of the football, and I just don't think they did enough to address the defensive side when you got those young, dynamic players at quarterback in the AFC Central. So for me, that is a wasted pick and an opportunity to do something bigger if you're the Bengals in the second round. But now you're saying, like, if we don't have the ability to run the ball and dominate the time of possession and keep those other offenses off the field, we're really not going to be able to win games here in year one in the Zach Taylor era. So, to me, I'm like, I get trying to have a philosophy, and you can see the philosophy is there for what they're trying to do, but I don't think it's enough to move the needle. They didn't do anything in this draft as a Bengals fan, speaking objectively, to where I feel like they haven't moved past any of those other three teams I just talked about in that division. They are still playing for fourth place in the AFC North, and that's horrible, but that's just where it is. Cleveland is a better team than them. Baltimore is a better team than them. Pittsburgh is a better team than them. So now you're looking at a 2-3 year project for them, and it's like, okay, I got to be okay with that and say, yeah, I got some Buckeyes, but it's tough. It's tough for me to be overly excited about it, to say we did enough to make a step to where I can make a for real argument without my fan hat on to say that we can make a move in that division or in the AFC period. They just didn't do enough.
You still got Andy Dalton, though, JQ. Remember
hey,
that.
Man, you Stop got it. Michael Jordan on your team, man. What are you whining for? Man, Michael Jordan. Come on. But in all seriousness, when you look at the Bengals, just looking, you know, obviously JQ knows the team better than all of us, but I'm just going to comment on just the draft pick perspective. Obviously, Jonah Williams, you got great value there in that pick. You know, may not be the sexiest pick, but, you know, I had him going number 10 in my latest mock draft. So, I mean, you got solid value there. So, no issue there. But I had issues with both of their secondary picks, Drew Sample and Jermaine Pratt. But to be honest with you, their day three picks, I love their day three picks. To get mm-hmm. Ryan Finley, Michael Jordan, Trevion Williams, Deshaun Davis, and Rodney Anderson, those are all solid mm-hmm. picks with great value and where they got them in those rounds. So, I mean, if I had to grade the Bengals, I'm giving them somewhere around a B-plus because they got, to me, they got a lot of great value on day three of the draft. It was really just day two where they, in my opinion, didn't get great value. But the first-round pick, they got great value. And like I said, all of their picks just about day three, they got tremendous value with a lot of those picks. You know, if worst come to worst, they got a lot of depth on their football team. They added depth at the running back position. They got depth on the offensive line now. And, you know, Ryan Finley, I heard that was a guy that they had a pretty strong conviction about, and they went out and got him. So we'll see, you know, if they think he can eventually be a starter or he's a lifetime backup quarterback in the league. So we'll see about that. But, you know, overall, I mean, like I said, their day three picks kind of made up for their day two blunders. And I would probably give them somewhere around a B-plus.
Yeah, Cincinnati, they believe in Tannehill, which was evident in their draft to me.
Right?
Yeah. Or the red, don't. He's the red rifle, red whatever he is, and
he's red.
I'm not surprised. I want to be surprised though, and I don't. Well, he's gonna have to show me something. He really is, because I think. I mean, as you know, it's a quarterback league, and you have to have a quarterback that scares people. And I don't see their quarterback scaring people. And so they failed there, in my opinion. But those guys are being paid to be football guys, and they're being paid to be experts in knowing what they're doing for their team. So, you know, behoove it for me to say, I don't think that's, you know, where they should have went, and then behoove it to me to think that they believe in Tannehill and I don't. But those guys are getting paid to believe in Tannehill, and I'm not. So, but if they don't cover their over and under, then now I'm mad. And I'm not thinking they're going to cover their over at all in Cincinnati. That's like, especially they're in a really good division, and they're not keeping
up. Yeah, they are. I agree.
So I guess, and I don't know, you must be thinking about Ryan Tannehill in your brain, Curtis. So we're obviously, I know you're thinking about the red, what's the name? Red something.
Red,
you know,
rifle.
We're talking about Andy Dalton. Red rifle.
Yeah, but, Andy Dalton. There he is. Yeah,
Andy Dalton. There it is. But Rob, so you don't want to say anything about your Saints or anything like that, or no? Or are you kind of like,
oh,
whatever?
Yeah, yeah. I thought we were talking about the Bengals. I don't
want to adjust
again.
No, I was basically saying this is an opportunity for you to kind of like talk about your squad and how you wanted to add, you know, your thoughts about how your team did for the weekend. Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, the Saints didn't have a lot of picks, obviously, in this draft. When you look at the Marcus Davenport acquisition, they traded the third round to get Teddy Bridgewater, and they traded a fourth rounder to get Eli Apple. So, obviously, those three players are already on the team that that picks from this draft. But based on some of the players get, Eric McCoy, I thought was a really good pick for the Saints. And the Saints' philosophy all the time, ever since Sean Payton has been there, the Saints trade up in drafts as many times as 17 times prior to this draft, and they traded up twice in this year's draft. So that's 19 times the Saints have traded up in the drafts in 2006. So obviously this regime does not like to sit back. If they feel strong about a player, have a conviction about a player, they typically like to go up and get them. As we saw a couple of years ago with the Alvin Kamara pick, believe it or not, they drafted Alvin Kamara in the third round. You guys know what they gave up to get that pick?
I'm sure you'll tell us.
He came out of nowhere for me.
They drafted Kamara in the third round, but the Saints gave up a second round pick to draft him in the third round.
Oh.
There's some strategy. There's some strategy there that I just don't understand.
So that's the Saints. Their philosophy is they have a conviction on the player they're going to give them. So they drafted Kamara 2 years ago, and they traded a second round pick in the following year's draft. Draft him in the third round in that particular year. But you can't argue with it right now. But at the time, you're like, what the hell? Why are we drafting a guy in the third round? We trading the second round pick to get him.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with that particular pick right now. And so that's kind of been the same strategy all these years. They like to trade up. They like to live in the now. And they traded up to get Eric McCoy, who's a guy I had going number 30 at the end of the first round. So you gotta like the value that you're getting for him right now. And if you look at the Saints toward the end of the year, first 12 week of the season, so they're offensively, they were scoring 30, 40 some points every game. A lot of that had to do because the offensive line was so strong. But if you look at the end of the year, the Saints had a lot of injuries on the offensive line, so the offense wasn't as dominant. And that even carried over into the playoffs, too. I mean, they were still scoring 20 some points, but they weren't scoring the 30 and 40 some points that they were the first 12, 13 weeks of the season. So this was a really good pick for the Saints because they need to get more depth on that offensive line. Obviously, they signed Nick Easton from the Vikings, and now with this pick, they give themselves at least six quality starters on the offensive line right now. So that was a really good pickup getting him where they got him. And then even better, the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson pick in the fourth round, they traded up to get him too.
Great pick. So they
traded up to get McCoy, and they traded up to get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and they got him in the fourth round, a guy that I also had a second-round grade for. So if you look at those two picks alone for the Saints, based on what they had, obviously not a lot of quantity, but I would give them a B just for the quality of the picks. You can't give them an A because they don't have a lot of picks. So I would give them a B based on what they were able to do in the draft. And getting Saquon Hampton, two in the sixth round, I thought was a really solid pick as well. So like I said, you can't give them an A because they don't have the quantity of picks, but I would give them a B for the quality.
Very good. All right. Gentlemen,
I was real interested. One of the things I was real interested in was Pac-12 players and where they went in the draft, and it was poignant, and it's going to send me to emailing the Pac-12 commissioner that Mr. Irrelevant in the draft and the only guy to be drafted out of UCLA was it. And I'm going to email the commissioner of the Pac-12. I don't need the Pac-12 to be getting many more Mr. Irrelevant. I don't think you do either, Mr. Commissioner. You guys better start doing better in this conference when it comes to football, because I'm not accepting Pac-12 players being in the Mr. Irrelevant position in anybody's draft. So he's going to be getting that from me.
Anyhow, start with Arizona and end it with Arizona. Good deal. So as we I'll talk briefly about, my squad, my Falcons, and, you know, obviously we're fanatics here, so we sometimes get a little crazy sometimes, and I know here in Atlanta we weren't as enthused with the first pick and obviously getting Lindstrom. And I guess the question that it kind of caught me off guard too, because I think, you know, everyone's like lying, as you said, J.K., everyone's putting out different things, smoke screens and whatever, because we were pretty much consumed or concerned that we're going to trade up and we were going to target Ed Oliver, or we're going to try to target on the defensive tackle. So whenever we get Lindstrom, we're like, oh, okay. Not that it was a bad pick. I think it just caught everybody off guard because, again, we were kind of like steering towards defense. Now, again, I think it's a great pick in hindsight. Maybe a little too high, but again, if you get your guy, get your guy. And the same thing, they traded back in the round and they got the Caleb, what's his name? McCrary, whatever, from Washington, and that was a good pick too. We're like, all right. This is another, it seems like it could have been later on, but, you know, we don't know what their draft board looks like. We're not in the war room, but you know, from then, you know, again. So we got that. And then obviously I obviously reached out to JQ about the Kendall Sheffield. Really fat, like one of the fastest players, obviously, in the draft. So it's good to get some Ohio State folks back in there to kind of combat the Saints. And I think the fact that they really like them, the Falcons' brass, you know, and again, it just kind of shows you he may be a good nickel corner. I mean, I have no clue as far as his potential, so I'll let you talk about him, JQ. And then obviously we got, you know, development guy, John Kaminsky, Quadri Olison from Pittsburgh. That's the big back we needed for Dirt Cutter. Jordan Miller, another good corner from Washington. Shout out to you, to the Pac-12 there. Curtis, and then obviously get Marcus Green. I guess he's a wide receiver / running back. I think that's a great pick in the sixth round, too. I think it's one of those picks that, you know, again, just having a trick player. I know they wanted McCole Hardeman from Georgia, but Kansas City beat us at the punch in spite of what's happening with Tyreek Hill. So that was a surprise. But, again, everyone needs to chill out because everyone's freaking out that we got – you know, we needed offensive line. We got offensive linemen. You signed two guys in free agency. But I think what Dan Quinn's trying to say is whatever happened last year, the depth, that is definitely not happening this year. So, yeah, they signed up, drafted it. We are not going to do that again. So, just everyone just cool out on the Falcon fans about what's happening. And that's kind of my two cents. If you want to add to Sheffield about that, I'd love to hear about your thoughts about that. And then we got about 8 minutes here as we kind of wrap up the show, too. So, go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, no, I'll be quick. Well, I wanted to go back to the Saints, and the one he didn't mention is that undrafted free agent and little Jordan Humphrey from Texas. I really like that signing from the Saints. That is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah,
he's bomb for Texas, okay, for the Longhorns. If you give him Drew Brees and you give him Michael Thomas to help show him the ropes, that might be one of the ones that everybody looks up and say, oh, my God, how do we not draft him? How do we not make him a priority? He's a big body wide receiver. He goes and gets 50-50 balls. He can learn from Michael Thomas. He can learn from Drew Brees and how to be a NFL wide receiver. I really, really thought that was a fantastic free agent signing by the Saints. That might be one that the NFC South looks back and says, my goodness, how did we let that happen? But to your point,
his speed was the reason why he didn't get drafted. And, you know, but hopefully it is a steal for the Saints. But, yeah, that was the reason why he fell off a lot of teams' draft board because he didn't run well. But you can't knock his production at University of Texas, though. You really can't. So, obviously, from Saints' perspective, you're hoping that he's going to be a steal. But that's the reason why he fell out of the draft.
That's going to be absolute steal. It's all about fit. And I think with him playing with another big body kind of wide receiver with Michael Thomas and getting Drew Brees, and you know, he's going to get another year or two, Drew Brees, but that being in the building with Drew Brees and Sean Payton and learning that kind of offense and that kind of structure, if he's open to it, I think that's really going to be big for him. And not everybody that's a good wide receiver, you know, is a blazer. Michael Irvin was never a blazer, and he was fantastic for the Cowboys.
Great call.
For anybody that says that, for anybody that gets crazy,
Chris
I'm not
Carter,
saying that. Well, I'm saying that Chris Carter, you don't have to be a blazer to be an effective and a productive wide receiver in the NFL. It's all about fit. And I think much of that offensive scheme will help him out. Kendall Sheffield, he's a head scratcher for me, only in the fact that he has all the physical ability. That dude is on the Ohio State track team. I think he is won like the 60 yard dash in the indoor championships in the Big Ten. But he relies too much on his speed and doesn't focus on his technique. So it's incumbent on the Atlanta coaches to kind of coach him up and kind of get him to rely more on his technique and teach him that and say, yeah, you may be able to make up some of that with your speed, but you're going to get killed 10 times in the NFL if you solely rely on your speed and not rely on your technique. And that's why I'm with Kendall Sheffield. He has the ability, no question about it, speed-wise, athleticism-wise, but can he go back on his technique and not rely on, I'm fast, so I mess up off my guess, I can always recover, because it didn't work always in the Big Ten, and it damn sure ain't going to work in the NFL if you do that. So I think he's properly rated and picked where he was, but he's going to have to coach up a bit and be receptive to saying, hey, we know you're athletic and you have a lot of speed, but you need some more technique. And if he can accept that from Atlanta and work with Trufant, he could be really good for the Falcons. But that's my assessment of him, being an Ohio State fan. I've seen him get burnt with guys that are nowhere near his speed and athleticism because he just – didn't have the proper technique.
Yeah. Nice. And if I had to, you know, obviously with the Falcons taking their first two picks of an offensive lineman, you have a quarterback who you consider to be one of the elite quarterbacks in the game, you have to with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. I don't think there's been not one draft since Sean Payton and Brees have been together that we have not drafted an offensive line. And and Sean Payton sees the value in having a strong offensive line when you're having that kind of, well, you know, you need a good, strong offensive line anyway, but especially when you have that elite quarterback. And there we go again. The Saints probably had one of the better offensive lines in the league when they were healthy last year. And their first pick, bam, another offensive lineman. And and that's what the Falcons had to realize this year. Matt Ryan took a beating. He took a lot of ass whippings last year. And they had to figure out a way.
Go ahead, bro. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Hey, I'm trying to justify your pick.
Yeah, yeah. Keep going. Backhanded compliment.
But yeah,
go ahead.
But drafting those offensive linemen, they realized, I mean, Matt Ryan sacked 42 times. They gave up just as many, I think the second or third most sacks in the league last year. So, I mean, you got to give them credit for, you know, making that a priority in this year's draft. I'm not sure about the value of the picks, but both of those guys are going to be starters in the NFL for quite some time. So, whether you like where they got them or not is another story, but those two guys are going to be really good football players. And you look at Caleb McGarry to come in and be a right tackle for that team. And Chris Lindstrom, you know, he's a guy that's definitely capable of being a 10, 12-year starter and probably was one of the best guards in the draft. So, I mean, they're going to get better offensive line play, and I hate to say that being a Saints fan. So if I had to grade the Falcons draft, I would probably give them a B2 only from a value standpoint. I had Lindstrom somewhere around 18. The Falcons got him at 14. Not that big of a difference. McGarry, I had him more as a second-round guy and got him in late first. So just from a value standpoint, I will probably give them a B as well in this draft.
Yeah. We're not talking about that we didn't like the pick. I think more or less I think we were talking about that. I think it was just like, oh, it caught everyone off guard too because I think the reach is what it is. But we definitely needed that for sure. I agree with you. And I think they weren't really good at drafting offensive linemen too. So that's why we're like, eh, all right, we'll see how it plays out. So good.
I was gonna say I just made two observations. The first wide receiver that got drafted came from the Pac-12, and I think that was a Herm Everett.
He was the second wide receiver taken.
That was Brown.
I think that was a Herm Everett
connection. Mm-hmm. And then the other. Did you see what New England did with wide receivers? They seem to have targeted some few. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's going to be their answer to Gronk, is to get monster wide receivers.
So we talked about that. Bill Belichick is going to change the game. So do you think he's going one direction? He's going to switch it up on you, too, because we're talking about he was the first to do that three.
I love the Patriots, man. I really do.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
Well, look at value. Almost every pick, they got great value, and you know, I would have to give them somewhere around an A-, even though they're picking last in almost every round. N'Keal Harry, you know, gives them a big wide receiver, 6'2", 6'3", good size. Obviously, you know, they're losing a tight end, and both the top two tight ends were already gone by that point. And I didn't quite have an Irv Smith first round grade, and I guess they didn't either. So they wound up getting a big wide receiver, and Joquan Williams, getting him in the second round, and Chase Winovich. I mean, this is a guy that probably showed more production on the field than Roshan Gary did at Michigan, even though Gary has a lot more talent. And then they get Damian Harris from Alabama, Jutney Kajusti, offensive tackle from West Virginia, a steal, getting him where they got him at as well. He's a guy I think that can come in and play right away. And obviously you get Jared Stenham. Yeah. But we're closing it out. We're going to our OT portion. Click on the same link on tomorrow, the rest of the week, get the rest of our show. We still got a few more things to talk about here, so you definitely don't want to miss it. Let us know what you think about your teams. Call us. You know, call us next week if you want. We'll be back on next Sunday night again, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for our friends on the West Coast. Once again, we're going to be back on Sunday night again on next Sunday night. Good night, people.
I hate those damn Patriots. They got great. You got to think about it. Harry was going to the season, the number one wide receiver going to the draft and coming to the season. And you get him at the end of the first round. I think that's great for him going to that Patriots system. I learned from Edelman and Brady. The Patriots were pretty solid throughout this draft. And Bill Belichick just again. And Drew Brees went in the Saints, maximizing their quarterbacks in the middle of the year. So you got to give him a ton of credit. Appreciate everybody for listening to the show and downloading the link. Please download it to go to the OT portion. We got more for you. And I hope you are in love with your draft picks. If not, let us know how you feel about it. Talk to you next week. Appreciate it.
Fire. We're in the OT portion as it is already, too. So, all right. Good deal.
Just another thing about the Patriots, this is the first time that Bill Belichick has drafted a wide receiver in the first round. Unbelievable.
Wow.
And, the first time Bill Belichick has drafted a wide receiver in the first round. So, I mean, obviously they see something really special in N'Keal Harry. And obviously the talent is definitely there. I mean, look at the production that he put out on the football field, too. It's definitely there. And that was the difference. DK Metcalf, you just didn't see enough production out of him. Did I think he would fall all the way to the last pick of the second round? No. But if you look at his production, he just has not done a lot on the football field, even with his great athletic ability.
All right. Good call.
Yeah. They're the gold standard. And man, you know, they're odds on favorite to get back to the Super Bowl. And
so
for me, it's a horrible thing. And it's a horrible thing. I think every team in the league need to figure that out. They need
to
figure out.
You're going to have to hear from your
out.
Girlfriend. Your girlfriend going to be rubbing it in on you, Curtis.
Oh, boy.
And is Chase Winovich not a Patriot? When you look at Chase Winovich's production at Michigan and what he brings to the table, does he not? He is a, to me, and I hate it, because I do not like Michigan. Everybody knows that. But he is a prototypical Patriots linebacker. And you see them draft him, you're like, yep. That he fits perfectly with what they're trying to do. Yep.
And that's what the good teams do. The good teams, they have a strong conviction about a player and they have a vision for the player. And obviously Bill Belichick does that better than anybody. He sees a player, whether it's free agency or the draft. He has a clear vision for him and he's got a strong conviction about him.
One of the knocks on Bill Belichick was that he wasn't willing to pay money for wide receivers. And this is a surprise. This was a little bit of a surprise.
As we're wrapping up, I know we got to really quickly, let's talk about the five teams of baseball value in the first round. And we're going to briefly talk about some NBA if we can get that into as well, too. So go ahead, Rob. Some teams that you thought, five teams that received great value for the first round picks.
Well, I mean, we already talked about Dwayne Haskins. That's one of the guys that from a Redskins point of view, where they got him at number 15 was a flat out steal, in my opinion. I thought at worst he would go 13 to the Dolphins or somewhere around there. Obviously, the Dolphins traded for Josh Rosen. Even though the Jacksonville, pretty strong team with pass rushers. I like the value. Again, Josh Allen falling into their laps, too, at number 7. I think one of the better pass rushers in the draft. Great first step. I think he still has some potential to grow, too. I think he's still got a lot of potential. He's a guy that also has the capability to drop back in coverage. You look at his snap count at the University of Kentucky, he dropped back in coverage almost half the amount of times he's ever rushed a passer and did it well. And he still had a high number of sacks, and he only rushed the passer under 50% of the snaps. So I think you're getting a real good athlete there in Jacksonville to add to the defense. And this is a classic example of them following a board and not reaching for a need. And at that point, he was clearly the best player left on their board. So I like to pick the Jacksonville, even though it's an area of strength, is now they just got stronger. And to me, I like it if you got at least 3 pass rushers on your defense. And they just added another one. And he's a versatile guy that can drop back in coverage. So Josh Allen, Dwayne Haskins, 2 for me so far. Andre Dillard, I thought what the Eagles did, getting him at 22 was another steal. They realized the Houston Texans wanted offensive tackle in this draft. They jumped a pick ahead of them to get Dillard once they realized Dillard had fallen. I mean, some of my mocks have Dillard going all the way as high as number 9. And, you know, I even had him on a few mocks to the Falcons at 14. But he's a guy that the Eagles got at 22 here. So I really like the value of what the Eagles did. Once he started dropping, they moved up to get him, moved up ahead of the Texans to get him. A really good pick. Marquise Brown, Baltimore. I thought getting him at 25 was also a great value pick. He's a guy that had pretty much gone in the top 20 and the best receiver in his draft. Great speed, good deep threat, and the Ravens definitely need some help at the receiver position. So I thought great value. And last but not least, the Redskins again, Montez Sweat. I mean, you look at his combine results, his first step, he has an opportunity to be another elite pass rusher on this Redskins team to put on the opposite end of Ryan Kerrigan. And I like the value of getting him where they got him at 2 at number 26. They had to trade up to get him. But when you look at what they did in this draft, especially in the first round, Haskins and Sweat, out of all the teams that had multiple first-round picks, they had the best draft out of first-round picks. Now, you look at the Giants with their 3 picks, the Raiders and their 3 picks, the Packers and their 2 picks, and the Redskins and their 2 picks. Out of all the teams that had multiple first-round picks, it's hard to go against what the Redskins did in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely, and I would agree with all of those. And just an honorable mention, and I know I said it before, I really like Josh Jacobs going to Oakland. And part of the reason why I say that, you say, okay, is Carr an elite quarterback? Had a good year, but he follows up with the par year. But now you give him Antonio Brown. Now you give him a thumper. And Josh Jacobs comes from Alabama. Like, again, he's not somebody that took, you know, 300 carries where you feel like, oh, my goodness, how much does he have left? But he has that mentality coming from winning program and the way he just runs the ball. So if he runs the ball like that and they sign some offensive linemen in free agency and as a predecessor to this draft, so if they do that, pound it with Josh Jacobs, oh, my goodness, they can play action passing. Who you still got Antonio Brown out there? If Carr can do what he needs to do to kind of recapture some of that magic he had a couple of years ago, I really like that pick for the Raiders. And, again, Marquise Brown, pairing him with a young quarterback in Jackson and letting them grow together. And you already know that Baltimore is going to keep a good defense. So it's like, you know, we don't have to score 35 points to win a game. We're going to be one of those teams that are going to have a throwback kind of defense. We're always going to bust you in the mouth, and we're going to run the ball, and they're going to be able to play action pass. If Brown doesn't – if he keeps his head together and turns into a junior AD – they're going to be a problem in Baltimore, and that's part of my problem with Cincinnati, because you look at what's happening around you in your division. Forget the whole AFC, your division. When I see that happen with them, I like that pick. I like that pick a lot for Baltimore. I really do.
Nice. Yeah.
Yep. I agree with all you guys on the draft. But, you know, like I said, for me, I'm really going to be curious at how it all pans out. And I'm taking note of, you know, because it's about jobs for me, and it's about good football. And, you know, the rookies, if they contribute to have these teams be better teams, better competition, that's just good for us as fans. And that's that. You know, I'm in love with football, and watching good football, and watching every single team in the league give you something that's worth watching is just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yep. Good call. Good call. All right, gentlemen. I'm going to give you guys again as we wrap this up because, you know, we're saving time for the East Coasters here. Give me time to talk about any topic you want to talk about over the weekend. You can be, you know, basketball, all that good jazz, and then we will get ready to set it up so we can wrap up the show, too. So start it off, Rob, and we'll let you kind of finish it whenever we wrap the circle back around for sure, as a thick round like the draft. Go ahead.
Well, I guess if I had to talk about anything here, let's talk about the Clippers and what they're going to do here in the offseason. Obviously, they just got eliminated by the Warriors. A lot of conversation on It seems as though they're going to be a bigger free agent attraction than the Lakers are right now. And I guess the question is, do they go after KD or do they go after Kawhi or do they go after both? And if you only can get one of those, which one will you prefer?
Kawhi.
I'm kind of leaning that way too. And I'll tell you why I lean a little bit more toward Kawhi. To me, he's a better two-way player. And he can do more. If you notice, Kevin Durant is really more of an off-the-ball scorer, but Kawhi Leonard can do a lot more with the basketball, and he can do it on a defensive end too. I know, you know, they have that load management thing in Toronto, and I don't know if he'll have to do the same thing with the Clippers next year. But I think Kawhi will be my first choice, or even over KD, if you're the Los Angeles Clippers going into this offseason.
Crack is whack.
I agree. I agree. And the other thing about it is, we know we had a little bit of the drama with Kawhi and what happened with San Antonio. But I feel like Kevin Durant, to your point, is more needy and needs more attention and more managing and more besides. And I think Kawhi Leonard and Doc Rivers' parent in Los Angeles is a fantastic parent. And I think they both understand it as well. And I'm with you. He plays both ways, but I don't feel like he needs as much. He's more gritty. He's more on the ball. And you don't have to manage his ego as much as you do with KD. I think KD to New York and him needing that limelight is a done deal. For me, and I was going to go basketball too, was the fact that we went chalk through the first round. And I know that we all kind of anticipated that, but we got, you know, 1-4 in the West and 1-4 in the East. And I'm really surprised mm-hmm. that Boston blew out Milwaukee like that in Milwaukee. I mean, I thought Boston would give them a challenge and play them tough, but I felt like I was going to get more of a Golden State-Houston kind of score in the Milwaukee-Boston series, you know, to start it off. So I was really shocked at that. But it's just, I'm just surprised, you know, not surprised, but, you know, here we go. And I said it before, and I was like, oh, you know, JT, you know, you're going to get more, you know, drama or whatnot in the first round. But we ended up with chalk in both the West and the East, and we got some really good series. And I'm going to say it again, and not just because Curtis is on this call, I'm really looking forward to that Portland and Denver series. I feel like you got a lot of guard play in that series. A lot of, you know, young guys on the Denver side. You got a lot of good guard play on the Portland side. You guys in Dame and CJ that have something to prove. That's the series for me. Because I feel like the other three, we all kind of felt like, okay, Boston, Milwaukee, going to be a great series. Toronto and, who am I forgetting?
The Sixers. Toronto
and
the Sixers.
Philadelphia. Sorry, Toronto and Philadelphia are going to be a good series. You feel like Houston going to see, going to be a good series. But everybody's looking at that other series like, you know, that's just a filler series to fill in terms of the schedule, in terms of the broadcasting. I'm really looking forward to that Portland-Denver series. I think it's going to be really good.
Well, you look at that Boston-Milwaukee series, you got to be really scared if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. Because when you look at the Celtics, they're a little bit more experienced than the Bucks. And if you look at top-to-bottom roster, the Celtics have more guys that can get it done. And it's just that the Bucks just played so well all throughout the regular season, and the Celtics just kind of cakewalk. But you look at come playoff time now, if you're the Bucks, you got to be really concerned in this matchup right now. Because, I mean, they got Kyrie Irving. Gordon Hayward can get it done. Jason Tatum. Brown. Al Horford. And they have the depth too. And another thing that the Celtics here, the latter part of the season and into the playoffs, they're playing Terry Rozier and Kyrie Irving together in the backcourt a lot more, and that has been deadly. Teams haven't been able to figure that out yet. I'm sorry?
That's the product of Marcus Smart being hurt, but you're right. That's a lot more offensive play. You lose a little defense, but you gain a whole lot offensively. Agreed.
Yeah, that has been tough to stop in the playoffs. Obviously, it's just game one, but you lose by 22 points on your home court. Don't get me wrong. I don't like the Celtics. I'd rather see the Bucks win. But,
yes.
But I mean, this is a real concern for the Milwaukee Bucks as number one team with the best record in the NBA, because the Celtics have more guys on that team that can put the ball in the basket. And so that's got to be a real concern if you're the Milwaukee Bucks right now.
Yeah, that's the state of the NBA. You can't be missing shots in the NBA. I mean, do the math. They hit a three, you come down and miss a three. They run up the court, hit another three. You come back down, and you miss your two, and they come back down, and they hit another three. Now you're down nine. and it was only 30 seconds went off the clock, you know, and that's
right.
exactly what I saw today. And, boy, I tell you what, if I'm a Milwaukee fan, I am afraid that this team might get swept. Oh, my God. Boston looks good. And they took Milwaukee out of everything that they thought they could do. And it was amazing to watch. And Boston, and like you know, you don't like them, but they are scary. They are scary. They're well coached, and they got some ballers. They got some guys that
they
can ball.
They are my pick. They are my
yeah,
pick.
But I have
and that Portland
one,
Denver series. That's...
I got one little thing about that. That I'm sorry about and a regret. It's always been an issue to me, and it's always been a source of contention with me that we got Nurkic because that boy in Denver beat Nurkic out. Although I think Nurkic was hurt, and that boy went into Nurkic's spot, and Nurkic was never able to get it back, and they sent Nurkic pack in here. So there's a little bit of regret I have that if I was coaching the Blazers and we had Nurk against this kid, I would tell Nurk, this is your chance to prove that Denver made a mistake. Because I do believe in Nurk. Yeah, and I would have loved to see Nurk and this guy go head-to-head in this, that would have been the series. That would have been some good stuff. But as you gotta get beyond that, and I gotta get beyond that. So now, Portland has to, and I think that's the whole ball game for them. He's gonna get his, but you make him fight for everything he gets. Yeah, you make that center fight, fight, fight. And then everybody else in Denver, I don't respect nobody else in Denver. I really don't.
Man, Jamal Murray is a dude. You and Gary are killing me. Jamal Murray is a stud in the making. I don't understand why y'all won't give that little young dude his credit. He is a stud. That off-legged jumper, rainbow that he hit to put San Antonio away to where they forgot to even foul in that game seven, that dude Jamal Murray is a stud. And you may not respect Gary Harris and the rest of those dudes, and Millsap is a role player, and I would give you all that. But Jokic and Murray are the real deal, and I believe that.
Jokic is
why
the real
I'm
deal
Jokic.
For real.
And I believe Jamal Murray
deal.
Is the real. And he is. And Jamal Murray is the real deal for real as well, and I think you're going to find out. And I'm not saying they're going to be Portland. That's why I'm so in tune to that series. But I think Jamal Murray, his grit, and he has that dog in it. We talk about that dog. In terms of somebody that you don't have to motivate, that always comes and brings it against them with a chip on their shoulder. And you talk about that Dame having that. I think that Steph has that as a point. Kawhi has that. Like he has that dog in him, but he's small, like Chris Paul, to where you don't think you can tell your team around him, but he's a dog and he's gonna come and give you everything he has and he's gonna give it to the other point guard, two guard on the team. Jamal Murray, yeah, I think it's going to have a coming out party to the national audience who doesn't know anything about him. They're going to say, oh, my goodness, that young dude from Kentucky is for real. You got to start giving him some credit. Now, can they beat everybody else 3 through 11 on that different team? I think so, and it remains to be seen. But I will give Jokic, I will give Murray a ton of credit for Denver. They're the 2 seed for a reason. It's because of those two guys.
Yeah. I think Jokic is probably one of the best.
Well, no, I'm seeing Damian and CJ better than this Murray guy. And I'm seeing Evan Taylor coming off the bench being able to contain that Murray guy. I don't see that Murray guy making any impact in this series. I'm sorry. You're talking about he's got the dog. Does he got a bigger dog than Damon? Does he got a bigger dog than CJ? Does he got a bigger dog than Steph Curry? The Stephen Curry we got here in Portland. I'm gonna look. I'm gonna look for that. I'm gonna look for that in that guy. And
okay,
he's gonna have to show me that what you're telling me, because I don't see it.
Okay.
I like.
I like Portland in this series, too. I think even though Portland is a 3 seed, I like Portland to win this series. For me, it's all about Damian Lillard. To me, he just got that eye of a tiger right now. He's got that assassin in him right now. And to me, Jokic is phenomenal. I mean, looking at that game 6 that night, even though they lost to the Spurs, I mean, he was almost unstoppable in the low post. And, I mean, this guy's got a tremendous future if he can stay healthy. A dominant big man. We don't have too many of those in the game from a low post standpoint. And I mean, he's phenomenal. Jamal Murray, yes, a really good player. But I agree with Curtis on this front. I don't think he's as good as the Lillard or C.J. McCollum.
I didn't say
from
that.
The backcourt. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. But, yeah, definitely a really good player. And but I like Portland in this series. I really do. I don't think it's going to be 4-1 like OKC. But I can see something like a 4-2 series here. I like Portland in this series. I think they're the team to beat in this series. But
listen,
I will say this, Curtis, the Western Conference Championship is taking place between Houston and Golden State right now.
Listen,
yeah.
I'm going to take Portland.
Yeah.
I agree with that, Bob. I'm taking Portland. But I feel like he's being undervalued. I think he's going to be really competitive games between the two of them. And I think the experience factor of CJ and Dame wins out. But it's not going to be like Murray comes out there and shoots the bit. I think Murray's going to have a coming out party, and Dame and CJ are going to bring the same thing they brought against Westbrook. That same kind of animosity, like, okay, we got to play against this little young fella, but he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do. I'm a Jamal Murray fan. I will own it. I'm not a Kentucky fan, but that young dude plays ball. And him and Jokic are going to be a good match for Portland. But I'm going to take Portland in 6, for sure. You can like somebody, and I don't think they're going to win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, you can like they're going to play good.
Yeah, oh, he's a ball player. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yep. All right,
well, the good thing about Portland, what Portland did was a good thing in the regular season was to get in this third spot because it was the clearest path for Portland to get to the Western Conference Finals. And so, and that was battled out in the regular season. And in the last 5 games of the season, Portland figured out what they needed to do to be in a position not to face Golden State, which has always been their nightmare in these playoffs.
Yeah, good job. All right, Rob, wrap this up, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great edition. We're talking sports with the 12th man. Obviously, we got the NFL draft coverage for you, NBA playoffs coverage for you. And obviously, we're going to be talking more of the same on next Sunday night. We're going to be back at you live at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You don't want to miss us on next Sunday night. Good night, people.
Listen, Jamal Murray and your agent, y'all need to send me some kind of, you know, tickets or something because I'm the only one out here rooting for you in terms of belief in what you can do. So I'm just going to put that out there. I believe Portland's going to win this series, but I feel like it's going to be closer than people think it's going to be because I feel like he's going to be that other cog. Everybody knows Jokic and triple doubles is the ability to pass in the post. And score down low and hit the three-pointer all day. But Jamal Murray is going to make this really interesting. I think CJ and Dame's experience take over and Portland wins. So I just want everybody to know that I'm saying that. So don't get it twisted. I think Portland advances to the Western Conference Finals. But I think it's a much closer series than people think. It's going to be highly entertaining, and that's what I'm looking for. I appreciate everybody for listening to the show and downloading the podcast for the OT portion of it. Please let me know if you feel like I'm full of it and whatnot. I'm on Twitter at Rich the Homie JQ. Please hit me up. We can debate on that as well. Y'all have a good weekend. I'll see you next Sunday. Appreciate you.
One thing I will say this about Jamal Murray. I did not expect him to be this good coming out of the draft. I thought he was going to be a role player at best. You know, he's a borderline all-star right now. I didn't expect him to be this type of player in the NBA. So he's he's definitely going above and beyond what I expected of him.
He's
on the mission.
There it is. Yep. Well, we're watching really good basketball, and it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun.
Let's keep it going. All right, gentlemen, you have a great week, guys. Again, we'll talk to you. We'll see you again for our next show. And if you need, like I said, we'll keep going, keep the text going, and get some rest. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yes, sir.
Good night, people.
Y'all be good this week.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Yep.